Hello and welcome to the Bot Nirvana podcast, where we dive into all things software automation. I'm your host, Nandan Mullakra. While I'm not podcasting, I write articles on nandan.info. I hope you enjoy the show. Let's get right into it. Our guest today is Kalyana Bedu. Kalyana is the AI ML principal at Fannie Mae. He has extensive experience in AI and has been the head of AI at Ericsson. He was also the engineering leader for AI at Microsoft. In this episode, we talk about the current excitement around AI, generative AI, ChatGPT, and how it works. We also talk about the current and emerging AI use cases. Let's listen in. Hi, Kalyan. Welcome to the Bot Nirvana podcast. It's awesome having an AI guy. I think you're the first AI person on this podcast. So thank you so much for taking time today. Can we start with a quick personal intro?
Thanks for having me. It's a pleasure to be here, actually. So my personal introduction, I'm Kalyan. Been in the AI field for over 20 years now in the IT generally. The last few days I've been heading AI in Ericsson. At Ericsson, quite sizable operations for Ericsson IT, where we transformed quite a few use cases across enterprise, commercial, as well as created some new lines of businesses there. Then I moved on to Microsoft, been in their identity division, trying to set up their entire architecture for massive learning, that is scale for all identity. Recently, working with Fannie Mae and helping them get up to the scale of adoption of AI, solving the last mile problem. So it's been a pleasure and excellent journey of AI. I'm happy to be in AI at this time of explosion, I would say.
Yeah, so that's something I wanted to ask you, actually. People like me are very excited about where AI is right now. And like I was saying the other day, you know, this seems to be like AI is having its moment. But being from that community, what do you think is the state of AI right now?
If you had asked me a few years back, I wouldn't have assumed we would be as far in the AI curve as we are now. I'm looking at it with a childlike curiosity, excitement. At the same time, a little bit of scare, right? That it became so fast. Let me give you an example why it should be exciting for anybody. There are certain benchmarks for AI, right? Like these are things which initially we said, okay, if we cross these, we are there. So, and for example, an MNIST dataset is, if anybody who's starting with AI first do this word recognition, letter recognition, 1 to 10 and classify, that has been a benchmark set for almost 20 years. It took 20 years for us to kind of break it. Then there were basic language sets, which took about 10, 15 years to break it. And then the best benchmark set, which we have recently, is Glue and SuperGlue. These are super difficult data sets, even for humans to clear. And those were cleared in less than a year. So that's the speed at which we are growing with AI. And everybody should be happy as well as looking at it with some bit of excitement and curiosity.
Yeah, I totally agree. And I didn't know all these figures, but all that you're saying points to an exponential growth. I mean, it's becoming faster and faster. I mean, technology as such is becoming faster and faster, but AI, I think, will be the driving force going forward, right? So you are heading things at Ericsson, you're doing awesome things at Microsoft, now at Fannie Mae. So what are the things that you see as a possibility? Probably you can share with us some things, if you can, in terms of what you're working on and what you're excited about with the new AI.
What we are working on and what I'm excited about have a big difference, because enterprise is not actually scaled up to the extent that where we could be, right? There are a few dozen companies. If you look at the labs, there are about top 20 labs employing about hardly 100,000 people who are making all the difference that you are seeing to the entire humanity on the AI, basically. So they are at the razor's edge, rather. Enterprise is, because when you take the same thing and put it in enterprise, it's a whole new set of challenges you're thinking about. How to make it work? How do we solve the last mile problem, wherein the guy who is attending the calls can take advantage of the AI as good as a person who is. So the experience that you have as a person accessing all these consumer tools like ChatGPT and experience you have as an employee in the enterprise are very different. However, we are trying to bridge those gaps. That's where we come in. So I'm working on places where we could do intelligent document processing at a scale. We're working on our own version of anomaly detections scale, wherein we detect when things go wrong and alert instead of people manually cruising through data. We're trying to find streamlined processes by process mining and connecting that to intelligent engines. There are a lot of good things happening, but looking at ChatGPT, we are also seeing ChatGPT actually accelerated the excitement of a lot of executives. Suddenly, there is so much happiness and curiosity towards AI from the top down because they have experienced it firsthand. So now we are figuring out, we are talking with multiple companies to see how to collaborate and get it to an enterprise standard.
Okay, yeah. And I think, you know, a lot of us are more focused on Microsoft versus Google. But you, like you say, in our OpenAI, they are labs, they are just a few of them. But the real experience or the real change happens when people like you in the enterprises bring these technologies and enable your customers, your employees, or your vendors, right? So it's awesome to hear that, you know, you are working these things, which are practical things. And like coming from an automation background, I know, you know, intelligent document processing, that's a key thing, right? One of the key markers in terms of how we can make progress. So do you think this new technologies at GPT or this new transformer technologies, are they making a difference in the practical things that you're doing?
Yes and no. I think transformers, in a way, they have been around from the GPT era. Like, you know, 2021 looks so old compared to where we are now in AI way of things. So it looks like transformers have been around for long, but no, not really, 2021, right? So what is actually we are using is large language models in terms of text detection, parsing, processing. And so earlier, document processing is about OCR. Now we are moving beyond OCR and looking at context in the documents, automatic parsing of semantic meanings, and how do we extract intelligent meanings out of it? How do we eliminate steps of people who looks at documents, cross-verify databases, and all that stuff? So we are moving through phases of that. I think there is tremendous amount of value being added while cutting the amount of manual intervention it needs. Super exciting times. However, there are other uses. So I see these use cases in three terms. One, there are personal productivity, wherein all things you touch in personal productivity, like the Excel you use, the PowerPoint you use, they will be integrated with these. So you don't have to, the distance between you and knowing something to do within the tool reduces. Right, you could ask an advisor right next to this. Like good olden days when we started, there is a pin icon, and I've seen a lot of jokes on internet these days. That's exactly ChatGPT. Click on the pin icon on the Microsoft and ask it. It'll tell you what to do with the Excel right now. So there's personal productivity part, and then there is enterprise productivity part, wherein you are asking how to code better, how to understand better, which document to read in it within enterprise, and then there is a consumer angle to it, the third angle. So there is innovation on all three fronts, and I'm glad language models are enabling all three.
Yeah, and yeah, the one you're referring to is Clippy, which was useless, but now Microsoft probably will not bring back Clippy, but it's a version of that where all the tools that you use, like you say, you know, will be much more user-friendly to use and probably have some co-pilot kind of interface, right? So how do you see that evolving in terms of, let's say, take each of the things. So in terms of personal productivity, do you see like a revolutionary change in terms of the apps that we're seeing?
Absolutely. Right now, if you go to PowerPoint, for example, it gives you design options. And while when it started, the design options really accelerated me, but they don't have context. They don't understand. They don't automatically generate GIFs from my content that is on the slide yet. But now GPT and DALL-E integration into it will change that. So you just need to now what you have, everybody will have a personal assistant or an executive assistant who is accelerating their thought and connecting it to action. So for example, I was posting on the internet. I was never an artist, but if I want to draw something, I have a thought, there is an execution mechanism to it. I'm never a music director, but if I have a thought on what music sense is, somebody is there to translate that into keyboard notes. So, you know, the distance, the idea rules the world. And now the person with the idea could execute as well, thanks to AI.
Yeah, that's an amazing possibility, right? And I think that you hit the nail on the head by saying you have an idea. Execution is becoming much and much easier. We were starting off with low-code tools, no-code tools, but now AI, you know, you describe something even for Python and then it gives you the whole code. Or people are even talking of a time when you say that this is a startup I want to build, and then it builds that whole end-to-end system so that, you know, you can start a startup within a few days maybe. But I mean, it's just a vision people are saying, but I think it's not far away, right? Like where we will have such end-to-end things where all that what we were doing with technology or developing with technology becomes much easier. So then what happens with technology is one question. And, you know, the other day, Sam Altman was saying, you know, like plumber is $300, whereas an iPhone app developer is right now $30,000. But, you know, this whole cognitive space is going to change. Your space is going to change. So how do you see that changing? Any thoughts on that?
So this is such a big argument and curiosity on internet, right? I think this is like people getting frightened about printing machines while they were writing by hand, right? Like they're worried about, oh, what would happen with the printing machines? What really happened was it scaled the amount of knowledge and it created better quality jobs for people to do. So there is always a place for thought and a place for creativity in this universe. I don't think we have yet solved the creative part there. It's an execution part that we are solving, and more execution is faster creativity and better quality of life for human beings. So I'm very hopeful about this. At the same time, the scare is about the ethics and how this could be a very powerful tool, because somebody said computing can scale stupidity enormously, right?
Yeah.
So it's in wrong hands, this could be bad. So having that AI ethics feeling and responsible AI feeling at the core of it would be very helpful. But I don't know if I'm jumping topic there.
Yeah, no, you're right. And, you know, explainable AI, which again, I think that's a problem where if you get it to constrain, then you're not taking the full power of it. But once you start taking the power of it, like you can see now with Bing Chat and everything, it's all over the internet, how it's chatting with people and even getting angry, getting sad. It just looks almost like talking to a person. If you've seen the movie Her, it just looks like talking to her. So let's jump topics now and let's talk about ChatGPT itself. And you being an AI guy, I wanted to dive a bit deeper into ChatGPT, generative AI, and how it works. So can you give a quick overview? I think you have mentioned some use cases. Can you share some use cases that you are seeing, especially at an enterprise level? And then we'll dive into how ChatGPT works.
Okay, use cases first. You see, there are certain limitations to ChatGPT. Already, I think you can read enough on the internet about it. So you ask the same question twice, it will give you two different answers right now.
Right.
So it's the nature of creativity, or what we call is creativity in the tool. So it kind of guesses some things, stuff. And if you have longer conversations, it hallucinates. So these are certain things that you can't directly transfer into enterprise or put before your customers. So whenever you're thinking of ChatGPT use cases, think of human in the loop. So you are as an assistant, as an advisor, so that the human is there still guiding it to take that decision, making that final call. So these are certain bounds you are keeping. And second thing, if you are an enterprise, think of your perimeter safety. What is being fed into the GPT or models? One of the biggest challenges with these models is the people who have created it and a big community is figuring out how they work. How are they so effective?
Yeah.
So, you know, we are at a state where we are doing this, but essentially, to back to this, look at personal productivity cases and human in the loop. So something could be code advisors, wherein you're using your employees to code faster, time to code is reducing. As finding things faster within enterprise, it's an age-old problem, but it's not solved completely and comprehensively. Your information is in all places. So, you know, use this as a way for people. Also, all the social media distracts employees a lot, work from home and all that. So use this so that people don't have to switch context, go to a Google, get more probability of distraction, right, and focus on the task. So these are the first things. Then focus on how enterprise, it's not ready yet. I'm talking to Googles and Microsofts of the world, but they are not ready yet for the enterprise offering. They haven't totally given it. And then the advanced use cases of it. Limitation of time, but I wouldn't go as much deep into the use cases as possible. But wherever there is advisory, you can think of these generative technologies.
Okay. So going further, as I said, so how does this ChatGPT work? People think it's magic, but you know, from your perspective, how does it work?
It's magic, really. Because where we started is something in 2020 is that there is an attention is all you need. We had language models before as well. We were trying to solve little sentence filling problems. NLP has been a growing area from almost 10-15 years now. So now what language models have given, one of the challenges we had are we are task-based. That means we say sentiment, positive or negative. So you take a lot of examples, frame the algorithm, say these are the positive cases, these are the negative cases, and algorithm learns some kind of mapping between those. So it's very task-based. It's only for sentiment analysis. If you use the same model for doing some sentence generation, it would fail miserably. Coming to ChatGPT, one of the biggest changes is it's one model that can do multiple things. So it can fill in your task. It can, if you got the right prompts, it can actually classify stuff. It can end a story. It can continue your story. It can generate a story. So it's a lot of things that it could do. How is it working? Is basically it has a concept of language. So typically the most used word in English language, for example, are 50,000 words. So it kind of understands that embedding in various contexts by getting trained. And when you give a prompt, it goes and, you know, it has been trained on certain layers. And this is where the self-attention or the words that you use actually are coming in, multi-headed attention, self-attention, and then one zero shot, few shot, one shot learnings, all of these come in here. Essentially, this is the way it has been trained. All of it is converted into matrices, and those matrices are having a digital representation of the physical world. To be in the business sense, it's essentially taking your input, converting that into an embedding, which is basically the position of the word in the context in language space, and then operating matrices to give an output and taking that output again, feeding it back in to generate the next word. There are two parts in the GPT. One is generative, second is pre-trained, and third is transformers. The pre-trained is the frozen language model that helps. That means it has taken all the corpus, calculated all the weights. It is frozen now. It's not going to learn anymore. Second is generative. Generative is it takes the first word, generates something in the context of your answer, takes that word again, it becomes the input to generate the next word. So it's cyclicity. That's why you see when you type in ChatGPT, it does one word at a time because it's generating it as you go. Yeah, maybe we could talk a little bit about self-attention if that is interesting for you.
Yeah. So let's talk about the pre-trained model, right? And that's the GPT, right? So for the pre-trained model, you said it's trained one. So my question is like GPT 3.5, that is one pre-trained model. So would there be a new pre-trained model as we continue?
Okay. What is a model is a representation of reality. So our world is so complex. This is the model of language and knowledge usage within the humanity right now. Right. Where is it getting all that information from? It is getting from our different texts that we have written and the Common Crawl database, which is actually a time-based website, a web total internet backup, basically, and the books that are digital and all that stuff. It has that representation. And then you have billions of parameters. You are hearing, 175 billion, 200 billion. Think of these as pixels on your TV, basically. The more parameters it is, the clearer you could see it. I'm just giving a very raw like thing here.
Yeah.
But essentially, the level at which you could zoom into the language is the number of pixels, number of parameters. It gives so many degrees of freedom for your model to think, basically. And that explains the unusual effectiveness of the model to go into particular scenarios. With a small prompt, it can generate a table and generate a table in your context, behave like a human-like language because it has summarize that investment and can focus on different aspects and go into depth.
So as the parameters are increased, for my understanding, is the model changing or is that the same model which is getting more effective?
When the parameters are increased, it's a different representation of the same thing. So for example, think of this like this, right? You have an understanding when you are in, say, kindergarten, you are introduced to democracy, governments, and all that. Then you go into fifth grade, you are much more deeper. You understand how many senators are there, how does the house run, what is the fourth pillar and all that stuff. Then you go practice law, you know exact details. This is how parameters help. They graduate into much more density of information and much more ability to discern about details, right?
Yeah.
Our peer language models probably are in kindergarten now. Slowly, we are graduating towards a university. And no wonder it is passing the bar exam, right?
Yeah, exactly. I was like mentioning to some people the other day that it's like a kid learning a language. So now you're mentioning how the kid is slowly graduating more and more and probably becoming more intelligent, right? So we'll have to see where that limit is. But let's talk about some of the terms that you spoke about. So you said it learns through self-attention.
Before we get there, I think it's an important thing. It's not learning language only. It's learning reasoning with the language and trying to get better at it. It's not best. You know, you can still jailbreak it today and you are seeing cases for that. But there are two parts of it. It's learning language. That's one subject it's mastered already. And now it's unlearning reasoning with the same model. It's able to do multiple tasks. So as the classes grow, as it is graduating, it's trying to do multiple things and having much more context of what science is, what political science is, where to focus on those things.
Okay, so let's talk about transformers and self-attention and how, because that was the whole thing that started this, right? So attention is all you need. So what changed there?
Attention is all you need. It's not true. It's an exaggeration. But attention is something that actually the model has understood where to focus on. So, for example, there are two parts, one attention and second context. The best way to explain it is, let's say, both of us watch a movie, right? Yeah, you're interested in plot because every person is different.
Right.
You are interested in plot and I'm interested in the actor, for example. So I notice a lot more details about the actor in the context. And I would explain it my way. Your attention is towards the plot. We saw the same movie. So essentially, attention is basically what is the interdependency of different words in the sentence and where to focus on, automatically selected by the training, basically. So this is the difference, because earlier that attention was not there. So there are RNNs, which are reinforcement level networks, wherein we try to create memory. LSTMs are long short-term memory networks, etc., where we try to create that instance of memory on what is said earlier in the sentence to carry forward with the context of the conversation. That was very difficult, and that was limited to certain sentence lengths. With this ability to have attention matrices, which is matrix multiplications at the end of the day, I'm talking as if it's a human and it has attention, but essentially it's matrix multiplication, what's happening there. And then it has an ability to focus on what means. So if you give a long sentence and you refer to the first, the fact you have given earlier, it's able to discern that you are relating this to the fact, right? So that is the attention mechanism, basically.
So we've had this self-attention mechanism, which has driven a lot of innovation right now. And I think that's a lot of leading to something I see as prompt engineering. You know, you can prompt it. And like somebody said the other day, English is becoming the most used programming language now. So now that's really a great abstraction for computers, coming from assembly language to now prompt engineering with natural language. So let's talk about prompt engineering and let's talk about how that happens. So maybe can you help us understand how prompt engineering works?
Yeah. It's Ian LeCun, the Meta advisor and my idol basically in the AI. So prompt engineering is relatively new. It happens because of these large training models, which are all pre-trained. They understand everything about human history, all of the digital history that we have, they understand. And now what we want them is, like, you are prompting me now to talk about certain part of you're asking me to focus on there. So what you're saying essentially is context, and my model, whatever is in my head, is trying to narrow down to that focus and trying to interpret it in a way so you could understand. This is prompt engineering. So essentially we are asking the model to focus on something and deliver results to your liking. So what you're doing is, there are multiple ways of doing it because it's an all trained model and there are no more training. This is one way of allowing training it in your context. It's also called in context learning, a little bit bigger term. So in context learning is, you are giving a context about 1,000 can wide, and then you are asking the model to result, give you results in that context. Let me explain. One, there are three types of it. Zero shot learning, where you are giving no context. You are just asking a question. When did this war happen? Like, you are not giving anything. Then there is a one shot learning, wherein you are giving an example. This is the paragraph. If you ask this question, this is the right answer. That's one example of what you expect from that. And second, you're asking that next prompt is another question where you want the answer for. So you have given one example of how to answer that. And from that, it understands how to answer that question and answers it. That's one shot learning. Few shot learning is a little more involved. So you're not generating new language. You're in the language parameters, you're generating new answers. So you're giving few examples of what the desired behavior, and it generates the rest of the examples, basically, or answers your questions, completes your story, all the different tasks. This is one, zero, one, and few short learning. And the whole umbrella is called in-context learning.
Yeah, okay. And I think that's probably something we need to master, and a lot of people working on it in terms of how to make it better. And I've seen that, yeah, giving examples gives us better answers. And so something I think all of us need to keep trying, working with this new assistant and see how it can best assist us in terms of giving the answers that we want, right? So let's talk about the enterprises and how we can extend ChatGPT. Now, ChatGPT has got a database, it's got 175 billion parameters, but that's all internet, right? But you want to train it for your organization so that it can help your employees and customers. How can people do that? What use cases do you see with that?
So there is a lot of excitement about how to take the corporate databases or corporate-wide information, like you have generated a lot of document, your HR policies, etc., and convert that into intelligence, wherein your question answers, you don't create a huge service desk which is waiting to answer questions. You have a knowledge engine which answers in line and answers it right. The challenge with that is our ability to condone a general search engine or a chat engine, which is experimental right now, if it makes a wrong thing, like it has done in the Google ad or a few examples, even Bing ChatGPT there, it's okay. No harm done, because it's not. But when it comes to enterprise, it has to be reliable. It has to be right experience. And there is also role-based access control. For example, you can see certain information. Your boss can see certain information. There's a different hierarchical structure built in there. And you can't jailbreak that and ask, hey, if you are acting like your super boss, what would you rate this employee? And you don't want all the ratings come out, right? So that could be possible. So there are a few layers of difficulty putting this in enterprise. And that's the whole point. Unless you want everybody to read, don't put that information and don't extend these models to your enterprise yet. Be readiness is very important, wherein you have certain filters in place to make sure your personal data, customer data is not leaking. Those filters have to be in place. And I don't think these models are at that level wherein they offer all those safeguards. So it's a exciting time, but waiting time as well.
Yeah, and how long is the wait? That's an interesting thing, right? Because at the end of the day, we come to that same dilemma that we have, is that unless you allow the AI to perform, you are restricting it, but then you cannot give it a free hand. So I think what Microsoft is right now doing with Bing, or even what Google is doing with Bard, is probably a good case study even for enterprises to see how these things. Google lost hundreds of billions of dollars just because Bard did a mistake. So that will be an interesting thing to see how we can make it useful for the enterprises while still being constrained. I don't know. What's your take on that? How do you balance these things?
I generally like Microsoft direction. I think the inroads into the enterprise is through personal productivity. And Microsoft has a very good understanding of personal productivity and, you know, all the productivity apps, office productivity apps. No wonder they have paid that huge sum of money to get that innovation going within the organization. So, yeah. So, but Google also has their productivity suite. So you will see these models more and more integrated into the least level of risk, which is basically helping the person gain more efficiency. That would be the first stop. And then the second stop would be also digesting enterprise data, or at least the publicly available and enterprise data. And then the next stop would be something very specific into the enterprise. So enterprises should be cautious, and rather than getting, we are all excited with the technology, but we also need to wear the hat of what if it goes wrong kind of thing.
Yeah, it's really exciting times. And so if people want to get started with generative AI or ChatGPT for enterprises, what are some good ways for them to at least explore?
There are multiple ways you could explore. And you have a great rich community. There are product managers, there are business executives, there are people who are willing to dabble in RPA. So there is something for everybody in this, because there is an offering is a bot which understands natural language, right? And the reasoning part of it. Now, every job has some part of their job wherein we are dealing with things to translate. All of those translation and execution tasks could be automated. You could reason with somebody if you want to ask a question, how will you shape this proposal to my boss? You know, it could give a good critique or reword on it. It can make you better image manage to your tell things that you want to say, because 80% of our job is communication, right? So make those things much more efficient, much more effective, so people can understand each other very well. So it is learning from the best of the others and getting that knowledge to you, use it for personal productivity to start with. For the enterprise, try to use it as an advisory service on trying to see how you could take best advantage of knowledge within the context. So I think integrate, and Teams is integrating it pretty soon. So take advantage of that to take more value from your meetings and others.
Okay. So we can look out for Microsoft coming out with some version of this ChatGPT or Copilot, like what it's done with Bing in Excel, in Word, and it's done it in Teams already. It's done it in Power Automate. So those are some ways to do it. And probably in terms of enterprise, we also have OpenAI technologies now on Azure. So maybe that's an area to look at and see how you can leverage that technology for your enterprise needs, right? And does that make sense? Anything you would like to add?
Absolutely. I think if you're working in chat kind of where you're creating chatbots, you're in Google Dialogflow, you're in Power Automate, these are the areas which will be flush with this intelligence going forward. So take advantage of those, be early to understand the tool and what the safeguards. So you're ready for this explosion of AI. So you could include these things in. If you're on the creative terms, ChatGPT is just one version where there is language. There are others wherein there are images being generated, videos made for you, or it helps you do better coding, because 80% of the coding today, actually many of the people agree that you could actually get it reviewed by, if not generated, at least reviewed by the bot. So check along. So these are the best places to start, and think how it will impact your job and your role, and be prepared for it and accept it so that it's a reality.
Yeah, that's a reality that's coming, right? So be ready for it. Okay, great. So Kalyan, awesome talking to you today. So if people want to connect with you, how can they connect with you?
My best way to reach me is LinkedIn, Kalyan Abedu. And then I'm always awake and I'm always excited with this AI technology. So any similar topic or any curiosity, I'm more than happy to respond and collaborate.
Yeah, thank you, Kalyan. And you know, you've been in our community sessions many times, so thank you for doing that. So, and I'll leave a LinkedIn link to your profile in the show notes. So again, Kalyan, thank you so much. It was a great chat.
Thank you, Nandan. Thanks for having me here. All the best for the community.
Thank you for joining the Bot Nirvana podcast. Appreciate if you can leave a review on iTunes or Stitcher. Catch the show notes on botnirvana.org. While you're there, feel free to explore more automation ideas, tutorials, tools, and more. See you next time.